Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. According to data collected by the American Veterinary Medical Association, 57% of all U.S. households own at least one pet, with 38% of those households having at least one dog. Keeping pets healthy is an important part of taking in an animal, and as is the case with people, prevention is the best approach. Today we're talking pet health with veterinarian Stephen Atwood. He's got a mixed animal practice on Martha's Vineyard. Good to see you back.
Hi. Good morning. Great to be back, Mindy.
You know, I want to talk about all the kind of tick worries. But first, I want to talk about just having a pet. You know, a lot of people go for the dogs and cats, but there's so many different choices now. There's hamsters, there's guinea pigs, there's fish, there's birds, there's reptiles. It's like when you're looking for a pet, all of them are a commitment, right? So what should you keep in mind when you're looking for a pet?
Well, you have to pick something that you like, first of all. Not mm-hmm. everybody likes dogs, not everybody likes cats. Some people have a real interest in exotic pets. Mm-hmm. Some people really like birds. We see folks that have these little pot-bellied pigs.
Mm, that's right. They're supposed to be very smart.
They're very smart. And, you know, people have pet cows. People have little ponies. Mm. It really depends on your, you know, what kind of space you have.
And you know, it's interesting how animals come to you. Sometimes it's like It's almost like destiny, right? I'm thinking of the cat that we had for like 20 years. She was 22. We got her, she was about two. And this happened, you know, when we were living in Indiana, and I had a girl I worked with who she had two indoor cats that would not accept another cat. So she was getting cold, and this family had moved away and left two cats. Somebody took the male cat. This was the pregnant female cat, which mm-hmm. most people did not want. Mm-hmm. So the kittens evidently succumbed to some other wild animal. And she said, "Would you just take this cat for a week and see how it goes?" And so I said, "Okay." And, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of, you know, how a weird. And I want you to tell the story about your new pet. Well, not so new, but you have a rabbit.
Sure.
Which
we have a little...
you also had a strange meeting.
Yes. We have a little bunny named Pedro. Well, he's not so little now. But my wife was driving home one evening close to midnight, and this white rabbit was sitting in the middle of the road. And she flicked her high beams and beeped the horn, and the bunny just sat there. So she got out of the car to sort of move him to the side of the road, and he just stayed there. So she said, "Hmm." So we reached out and picked up this little rabbit, and he didn't struggle to get away at all. And she goes, "Hmm, I guess it's ours now." So she picks this little bunny up, puts it on the front seat of the car, and drove him home. And we've had him about 3 years now.
And you really love this guy.
He's great.
Yeah,
he's a really great little guy.
And you said smart, clean?
Smart, easily hypnotized.
He'll just lay in your lap and watch TV with you.
Exactly. He's
great.
And very neat.
Yeah, very neat. Well, that's good to know. 866-999-4626 is our number this morning. If you'd like to join our conversation, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So, you know, the tick issue has gotten to be a lot of people are very fearful for even, you know, walking in the woods anymore. So if you have pets, especially dogs, and you know, if your cats are outdoor cats, hopefully you're keeping them indoors. But if you aren't, they're also can pick up ticks. And now on top of the dog ticks and the you know, deer ticks or black-legged spotted tick, whatever the proper name is. And now we have the Lone Star tick, and they all carry different diseases, right?
They do.
And so what do we need to... The dog ticks, I suppose, aren't as bad as the others, right? Do they carry anything that...
Oh, sure, they do.
They do? What do they carry?
Well, we've got, you know, you've got the black-legged deer tick and the western black-legged tick, which can transmit Lyme disease, babesiosis, tick paralysis, and now this Powassan's virus. Mm. So,
and that can be for animals or people.
Right, And then you've got, of course, the American dog tick and the Rocky Mountain wood tick that transmit Rocky Mountain spotted fever, tick paralysis, and tularemia. A lot of people don't realize you can get tularemia from the Rocky Mountain wood tick and the American dog tick.
Oh, I didn't know you could get that from the dog tick. Wow, that's interesting to know. And then the Lone Star tick, which is on the vineyard in particular, is really spreading quickly.
Right.
What have we got? What does that guy carry?
We've got tularemia again. We've got ehrlichiosis. Those are the two primary ones.
So tick prevention, what do you need? You know, you have, you know, a lot of people are worried about some of the chemicals that are in the, right. you know, the you know, front line and those kinds mm-hmm. of things. And mm-hmm. do they build up any kind of resistance to those sort of chemicals if you use them after a while, or not so much?
Well, it seems over the years that some of the topicals have become a little less effective over time. Nowadays, there's probably three general categories of products. One is the flea and tick collar, mm-hmm. Seresto being the primary one, and that seems to be a really, really effective product. And one of the nice things about it that the other products can't claim is that it repels fleas and ticks. The fleas and ticks don't have to bite to die, so that's an advantage.
Yeah.
It also lasts 8 months, and it's waterproof, and they can swim with it.
Oh, that's good
too. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and now if you're, you know, you come in, do you do like you do with the kids, a tick check on your dog? And if your dog happens to be of dark color, how do you do that?
Not very easily. It's not too easy. And then to just sort of follow up on what you asked before, of course, there's a once-a-month pill now mm-hmm. for fleas and ticks. And then, of course, there's the transdermal products that you put along the back. So those are the three general categories.
Right. And I can't keep track of the vaccines. Do we still have a Lyme disease vaccine for dogs?
We do. It's about in its third iteration now. So it's in the neighborhood of 95% effective at mm-hmm. preventing Lyme disease. And if they should get Lyme, the disease seems to be a little bit attenuated, much less severe.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of cases of Lyme in your practice?
Not too many now because mm-hmm. the vaccine's pretty commonly in use.
And now, if your animal happens to pick up any of these diseases from the ticks, can they be transferred to humans, or does it have to be you get bit by the tick?
You need to be bitten by the tick.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Deborah has a note for us. She said, please address the cost of dental care in dogs and if there are alternatives to extremely expensive dental cleaning and extraction. While I daily clean and brush my three small dogs' teeth, they appear to have genetic problems, and it's prohibitive for me to spend a minimum of $1,000 per dog for dental care. Is there another approach? Perhaps discounted care at a vet school? That's a tough one.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Dentistry in animals is expensive, and primarily because general anesthesia almost always is required. You really can't do a good subgingival cleaning with an awake animal. They just mm-hmm. won't tolerate it. So a lot of the cost of the dental procedures is the anesthesia. And in order to do anesthesia safely, pre-anesthesia blood work and exams mm-hmm. usually need to be done. So that adds to the total cost. Preventative measures, there are products that can be added to the drinking water that help to break down mm-hmm. The tartar and plaque buildup. Once the teeth are cleaned professionally and polished smooth, it's not too difficult if you're doing it several times per week to sort of wipe the plaque off before it has a chance to calcify and become tartar. So if you're really aggressive at it, once the teeth have been cleaned professionally, it's doable, but not easy.
Well, and good for her for doing that every day with the dogs. I mean, as the dogs get used to it, I would imagine it gets easier. You know, it's like wrestling an alligator.
It depends on the dog. Some tolerate the procedure a little better than others. Some, it's just not easy at all.
I like the flavor of that meat toothpaste.
Right.
How big of a risk is heartworm in our region?
You know, for a disease to maintain itself in a population, you have to have susceptible individuals. And by and large, almost everybody has their dogs on heartworm preventative medication, either by tablet or by injections. And a lot of people don't realize there are injections for heartworm prevention
now. I
didn't
know that. No.
And the new one out now is a one-year injection for heartworm.
Oh, wow.
So for folks that forget to give pills or don't want to give pills, or it's a nuisance, then once a year injection's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and usually, and so for some, my dog's been gone for a while now, but when we had her, it was you take it once, but then you take a break in the winter, right? Sometimes you didn't have to do it in the winter. But now with kind of the climate change happening, do you recommend that your patients do it year-round?
You're right. It used to be Christmas to April Fool's Day. You could take that time off, but not anymore. With the temperature changes and so on, it seems that most people are now recommending it year-round.
So there are many people who are adopting dogs from the southern U.S. where heartworm is more prevalent. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for a heartworm-infected animal to spread the disease to other animals?
Yes, through mosquitoes. That's how it is spread. Mm-hmm. The mosquito bites a heartworm-positive dog, flies around, the organism matures inside the transporting host, which is the mosquito, and then bites a susceptible individual, and that's how it's transmitted.
So, and for some of these folks who are getting these dogs from the southern parts of the state, when they get here, they have them tested, but sometimes that heartworm doesn't show up right away, right?
Exactly.
So how what's the process for really being sure your dog is not?
Well, you would want to retest depending on the age of the animal and so on. You would retest, and probably 6 to 9 months out from the time the first test was negative, you would want to repeat that test to make sure. Because we've seen that ourselves in our practice. A number of the dogs coming up from the south have become positive. Or they were positive. We just didn't know it at the time.
So what's the treatment?
There's a couple ways to do it. It can be done with oral medication. Not quite as effective. It's better done with a series of injectable medication.
Mm-hmm. And you have to keep the animal quiet for a while that's happening. They can't really exercise to their max, right?
Yeah, and the reason is that as the parasites die, and they're several inches long, you want them to dissolve slowly and be absorbed into the bloodstream and not large fragments breaking off and going downstream into the lung. So they need to die in place and be dissolved in place.
What an awful thing.
That sounds awful.
It really does. Are you seeing any trends in the number of animals diagnosed with cancer?
It seems that way. It just seems that
anecdotally.
Way. Anecdotally. Seems that way. We're seeing on all different types of cancers, bone cancers and skin cancers and oral cancers. And I think we are seeing a little bit more.
And do you think that's attributed to the fact that we have so many medications for others? It's like people, we can keep people alive a lot longer. Is it the same with animals?
Well, they say that the diseases that we see in animals are sort of sentinels for what's happening in the human population. So, there may be an environment. I don't think anybody really knows for sure right now whether there's an absolute environmental component. But, one theory is that early age neutering or spaying of animals can influence cancer rates in some cases.
That
there's research that's developing there. So it's not completely accepted as fact, but it seems to be a definite possibility.
Yeah, and without really knowing the causes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like your dog's, smoking a pack of cigarettes or something to get lung cancer. Without really knowing, what the environmental factors may be along with whatever genetic and all that big mix there, it's hard to tell people how to prevent cancer in their animals, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have seen lung cancer, for example, in a few cases that have come from homes where the owners are heavy smokers.
Oh,
so you wonder, is secondhand smoke playing a role?
Yeah. Do you see cancers in the larger animals that you take care of, like the cows and horses and things like that?
Yes, but in order to diagnose it, in a lot of cases, they need to be referred to specialty centers because these cancers are something that are internal and you need to image them. And, in general practice, you don't have the equipment to
can't
do
drag that
out
to the barn. Yeah.
Detailed, CT scans of horses and cows.
Yeah. Since you mentioned spaying and neutering, let's talk about this ovary sparing surgery in females. I had not heard of this before. You mentioned it to me. And in a lot of ways, it seems to make sense, but there's a lot of controversy around it, right?
Yeah. There's the Europeans in particular. They've sort of been more on the forefront of this, I think, than we have. But there's a thought that if you leave the ovaries behind and take out, just do a hysterectomy, remove the uterus, but leave the ovaries behind, it may have a preventative effect for a number of problems like urinary incontinence, urinary calculi, certain immune-mediated diseases, diabetes, hypothyroidism, even hip dysplasia, anterior cruciate ligaments. We're seeing all sorts of increases in ACL injuries in animals, and some feel that that there may be a component of that increased risk when animals are spayed and neutered very young.
Mm-hmm. And as part of that, with the over, I mean, they could be because the female animals would keep the hormones, right? So that would,
The theory is, of course, that there's feedback mechanisms involved with hormones, and keeping hormone levels intact has a protective effect.
Mm. So what's the controversy? What's the downside?
Well, it's not proven yet. This is something that's being looked at aggressively, and there's really probably if there was a downside, it's that owners have to realize that if the ovaries and testes remain, you still have the behavior issues that you need to be aware of, and you need to be aware that certain other types of problems can show up later on. Certain types of cancers that you need to have after middle age, you have to have them, you know, monitored for.
And you were telling me before, Linda, that there's this theory that male dogs that are neutered young sometimes can have some more, you think, less aggression, but there's sort of this idea that there could be more aggression?
Yeah, one of the thoughts is that aggressive and fearful behavior and cognitive dysfunction, which is sort of an analog to, you know, Alzheimer's, like diseases in humans, as they get older, they, you know, tend to get forgetful and walk around and pace at night and eat at strange times of the day, and just general cognitive decline. Some feel that early age neutering or ovarian hysterectomy surgery may contribute to that. Mm.
So what's the recommended age when, you know, because a lot of people, they get this puppy or this kitten and, you know, they do it young. I mean, is there some an age that's more suggested to be better for the animal?
Well, I think that's unsettled, but around 2 years old is something that doctors are looking at now as maybe a more optimal time.
Yeah. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about pet health this morning with veterinarian Stephen Atwood. He has a mixed animal practice on Martha's Vineyard, 866-999-4626. I'd love to hear how you came to get your pet and what pet you chose. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So going back to that, just kind of clarify what the suggestion is for spaying and neutering. You're saying what?
Well, one recommendation is in the case of females to remove only the uterus but leave the ovaries. The entire uterus needs to be removed to make sure that there are no infections like pyometra down the road. And in males, it's a vasectomy.
Yeah. So then they're not reproducing, right?
Right. They're not reproducing. So the issue of unwanted, you know, animals is not an issue. It's the health benefits of having a hormone stay behind.
Yeah. All right. Susan says, I have been a longtime dog owner and volunteer at the local shelter. I observe that large breed dogs seems to have a shorter lifespan than smaller breeds. Is there a physiological reason for this trend?
That's an interesting question. I'm sure there is. I don't know if I know the answer, but we do see that. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, that's when you look at the lifespan. I mean, like a Great Dane, let's say 8 years.
Right.
You know, a German Shepherd could be about 11 or 12, and the smaller dogs can live to be 20.
Right. No, yeah. But then on the other hand, you have, you know, animals in the wild like elephants and so on that have huge long lifespans.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting research that I was looking at, and I don't have in front of me, so I'm going to be very generic about elephants and some of these large animals and their resistance to cancer. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I mean that could be really interesting to kind of look at what's happening there and maybe find some cures for some human cancer. Caller asks about vasectomy versus neuter, meaning what's the, I'm not sure what the question is. Does that mean what's the difference or what's the benefits? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, surgically, the neuter is the testicles are removed with a vasectomy. The testicles remain, but the vas deferens, which is the little tube, the duct that carries the semen from the testicle to the outside, is resected. Mm-hmm. And so that blocks the transfer of semen. So it renders them sterile, but they still have their testosterone.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Many people are adopting animals through websites such as Pet Finder, and you get a picture, but you don't get to meet the animal before adopting. So what are some good questions to ask about the animal and the rescue organization before you adopt this animal?
I would probably recommend if they can get a referral list of folks that have adopted from these organizations and just see what kind of experience that they've had, if they were, if what was represented to them actually mm-hmm. came to pass.
It's good to know of what kind of living situation they came from. You know,
if you can find that out,
you know, can't always, right. Yeah.
Some organizations just seem to have better reputations than others, and that's sort of generally known. And you work with the ones that have good reputations.
Mm-hmm. The thing, too, is if you can, like, there's plenty of animal shelters that you can visit the animals.
Right.
And that's always really helpful. You can kind of see...
You can see the animals.
You see the animals. You get to see kind of how you bond with it. You bring your other dog along and see how they react to that. Yeah.
Right.
So what are the recommended preventative vaccines for dogs and cats if you were, you know, adopting or getting this new dog or cat? Yeah. Sometimes a lot of the animal shelters already have that in place. But, yeah. You know, as you say, you're getting some dog from the Southwest or something.
Right. Yeah, I mean, vaccines are risk-based. And so... there are vaccines that are considered core that all animals should have, and then there's vaccines that are situational, depending on the environment and where the pet's living and what part of the country and their exposure to other animals, whether they're living in urban environments or rural environments. It all depends. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Lyme vaccine in our area, of course, it's endemic, so it's pretty much recommended here. But if you lived in Alaska or someplace mm-hmm. where they don't have Lyme disease, it wouldn't be important. Canine influenza is another one that's situation-based. If you were in urban areas, New York City, Boston, areas where they do see canine influenza, that's something you'd want to vaccinate for.
Yeah.
Not necessarily something you need here. Yeah. And most of the vets know in your area. You just ask them, what are you recommending? What are you seeing in this area? And what are you recommending?
Yeah. And now, indoor cats. Do indoor cats need the same kinds of vaccines that outdoor cats would have?
Well, there's always some risk that they can pick up some of the diseases that are out there, even if they're indoor cats. But the risk is very, very low. So most folks would say that, you know, rabies is a requirement by law, so they have to be vaccinated for rabies. But some of the other more optional vaccines like leukemia, FIP, and viral rhinotracheitis, calicii, panic leukopenia, those are situational-based. And if it's a purely indoor cat that doesn't go out, probably you could get by with just rabies.
Now, there's a little bit of controversy. Some people say, the cats should be able to roam. Others say, nope, it should be indoors. What do you recommend to people when they come to you and say, hey, I'm thinking about a cat, and, you know, should I keep it indoors or should I let it go outside?
It's funny. That question's not asked very often. Most
really?
People have that in their mind already.
Oh,
they
wow.
want a cat to be free and to roam and have fun. And others say, no, I can't. I don't want to take the chance. I don't want to deal with fleas and ticks and cars and cat
coyotes.
Fights.
Oh, you don't have so many coyotes.
We don't have them there. But
I think you just had one, though. But
one.
Yes, I have one. there could be more
could be
coming
others.
Along, right? He's leading the way. And I will just say, the cat that we adopted was very much an outdoor cat. And when we got her, we made her an indoor cat. And I did not see her suffering at all by being an indoor cat. She liked to sit in the window and watch the birds, and I'm sure she would have loved to have chased them, but they were at a distance. She didn't try to escape. She didn't try to... I think, in my mind, I'm thinking she's like, oh, thank you. I'm in this warm house with food and people who will pet me, and I don't need to go back out into that crazy world anymore.
I think you were lucky. A lot of cats that have been outdoor cats that are made indoor cats really drive their owners crazy
trying to get out.
I was lucky, she had a lucky experience.
And she was a very smart cat. See, she knew it was a dangerous world out there.
In her best interest to stay in.
Exactly. Again, our number is 866-999-4626, 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, if you have any pet comments, questions, or stories for us. You have a degree in public health as well. So why did you decide to pursue that degree, and how does that inform your work as a veterinarian?
Well, first of all, I was interested in it, and it's another way of looking at disease. You look at things in population terms rather than individual terms. So it just was something I was interested in.
Did it help your practice? I mean, did it inform you as far?
Probably not directly, in an indirect maybe. It allows you to look at literature more critically and so on, because you learn all sorts of statistical techniques of analyzing data and so on. So that part was good. But day-to-day practice, probably not so much.
Not so much. All right. Janet's giving us a call from West Tisbury. Hi, Janet.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm concerned about the deer. They found, I think, 5 deer that had some form of paralysis or semi-paralysis.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know that there are no acorns this year, which means they're half starving, I guess. And in my yard, I notice I have a large rhododendron, and they've been eating that, and I thought that was poisonous. Mm. What's going on?
That's a good question. Now, you know, rhododendrons are definitely poisonous to dogs. Not sure about deer. And I know with the issue with the deer dying there, that's something they're actively looking at.
Yeah, we don't know what happened.
I don't think they have the answer yet.
Yeah. I know they're looking into that. They've done samples and things, and we're all anxious to find out what's going on there.
Yeah.
But
I don't think
we don't have an answer.
I don't think so. Yeah.
But Janet, stay tuned.
I have a bunch that come in my yard every night, and they clean up the bird food, you know, that's mixed corn and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I've taken to throwing out some of my horses' feed, and they clean that up. I've never done that before, but I mean, I can't believe what they've done to the rhododendron.
Yeah, you have a good point. I mean, the same thing on Nantucket. The poor deer are starving, and they'll, you know, things that say deer-proof plants. Well, not so much on the islands, especially Nantucket, because there's so many deer and they're starving, so they'll try anything.
Well, yeah. I don't throw out a lot, but I can't stand the thought of them. And they come every night at 5:30, right on the dot. There's 5 of them.
Wow. Yeah. Don't be surprised if you see a few more, Janet.
Oh, I'm seeing the same thing in my yard, too, Janet. They're eating my rodent.
Well, I looked at I have a very large one. It's one of those old type ones. Mm-hmm. And I looked out, and it's bald up to about 6 feet. Mm. And then I went over and examined. You can see where they've been chewing the leaves.
Well, Janet, thanks for the observation and the call. And hopefully at some point in the near future, we'll find out what happened to those deer that were paralyzed.
And we get more acorns next year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Thanks for the call, Janet. Let's talk to Eileen, who's calling from Chatham. Hi, Eileen.
Good morning, Mindy, and your very knowledgeable guest. Listen, I'm the proud owner of my 4th golden, and regretfully, they're notoriously known for cancer as they get older, if you're lucky. Some people I've heard of, you know, 5 and 6 years old, like, oh, my God. And I know there's an organization, I think your guests might know, the Morris Animal Foundation out in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And they had solicited something like 3,000 volunteers with their vets to submit, I imagine, blood or tissue or something from their dogs. By the time I found out about it, they'd already gotten the number of dogs they needed. On the other hand, my last two I lost to hemangiosarcoma. Mm. And if there was anything I could do to eradicate that, trust me, I mean, it's a terrible issue. I'd like to hear what your guest has to say about that terrible disease.
Sure.
Yeah, that is one of the theories, that early age castration and hysterectomies. In the observation has been, and I think the theory is, that it increases the rate of hemangiosarcoma, osteosarcoma, transitional cell carcinoma, prostate adenocarcinoma, lymphosarcoma, which we see an awful lot of. And, you know, it's not proven, but it's actively being studied, as you mentioned, by the Morris Foundation. And so in those breeds that seem to be at higher risk, maybe it does make sense to leave the ovaries behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There may be some protective effect there. And you know, if you have the option or the mm-hmm. choice, it might make sense to do that.
Yeah. It's so heartbreaking to watch your animal, you know, go through something like that.
Oh, yeah. Horrible. But yeah. I wanted to tell you, my vet, she's no longer with us, 5.5 years ago when we got our dog, she said to me, don't have him spay, neuter. I can never guess which one does what. Mm-hmm. It's a male. Mm-hmm. Until he's at least a year old. I said, okay. So I called her and I said, well, we're getting close. And she said, well, if he were mine, I would wait until he was two. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I was going by what you said, but I will. And she knew this 5.5 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
And so we had him done at two. And but we did the whole process. We did. This is the first I'm hearing about this selective, you know, mm-hmm. Spay and neuter. And I've got a neighbor up the street with a darling 8-month-old puppy. So I've got to get to her today and mm-hmm. yeah. let her know and yeah. see if her veterinarian shares that yeah. Information and can yeah. have it done.
Yeah. I don't think it's
a tragedy.
Yeah, I don't think it's widely accepted and available. I know that, really? That mm-hmm. I do them, and I've had people come down from Maine and New York City to have it
okay.
done at our
yeah.
hospital because they're yeah. having a hard time finding yeah. a doctor that will do it.
So we may see that increase in popularity as we get more research on that.
Hopefully. Yeah. But maybe after you hang up, I can stay on and get your name and your name of your practice.
Okay. We'll get that. Jenny will get that.
We're in Chatham.
Yeah. Yep. So. All right. Hold on. Jenny will talk to you, Eileen. Thanks for the phone call. Let's talk to Meg calling from Harwich. Hi, Meg.
Hi. I was just calling to tell you one of the delights of my cat, Sherlock, who was adopted. He's an indoor cat and a scratch pad. Pretty fabulous. I think a lot of people don't like him because sometimes they're messy. Scratch pad with catnip, I mean, he's sort of a peace and love cat once he has his catnip. And the one thing I wanted particularly to know is, are you supposed to brush cats that are indoor cats? Is that something that I should be doing on a regular basis?
Is it a long-haired cat?
No, he's a ginger tabby. Mm. Yeah, no, not really. But there is certainly a lot of white fur all over the place.
Mm. Yeah, I think you should. Cats generally like it, and it's a bonding experience to do with. You know, not every cat likes it, but for cats that do like it, it
yeah.
can be
especially
a bonding.
The glove kind, where it's like you're petting it, has the little brush in the glove.
Really?
Yeah,
glove kind. Oh,
yeah,
that'd be pretty good. And I'll give you a quick funny story.
Yep.
One day, this cat now he's a prisoner. He used to be able to go out all the time, but now that we have the coyotes, I can't. He's a family member. I can't let him go out, and I will never see him again. Well, anyway, one day I was in the morning and I thought, well, I'll put on a nature, a little tape, you know, and I didn't pay attention to what I put on. And what I put on was all bird sounds. The poor cat, I thought he was going to spaz out. It was too bad. But anyway,
where are those birds?
I know, exactly. Catnip in the scratch pad. Fabulous, fun thing for any cat that's an indoor cat. And have a good day.
All right. Thanks for the call, Meg. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with veterinarian Stephen Atwood, who has a mixed animal practice on Martha's Vineyard. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Paula says, I make my own dog food. Ground turkey, carrots, peas, spinach, brown rice, olive oil mostly. Sometimes I add in leftovers from our table. What should I avoid?
Onions.
Mm-hmm. Are peas okay for dogs? I didn't think peas were a good thing for dogs. Does it matter?
I probably wouldn't put those in. Mm-hmm. No, that sounds pretty good.
Pretty good. You know, it's funny. I used to have this German Shepherd, and at the time, I used to eat some of those chicken pot pies. And if I didn't finish it, I'd put it down for him, and he literally would. Now that big mouth, right? And he would somehow separate the peas. The plate would be licked clean, except for the peas.
He knew.
He's like, I don't like those peas. All right, let's see. We have This is from Eleanor. Little did I know that opening a Vineyard newspaper one October night would lead to a 10-year involvement with a marvelous ox who almost ended up as an ingredient in Osabuca in an island restaurant. He was scheduled for slaughter as a small calf, but managed to be rescued three times over his long life and lived out his senior years at a bucolic farm in the Berkshires. Yeah. As serendipity would have it, he had been castrated by Dr. Atwood, and my 400 paintings of this grand and very paintable fellow were exhibited in the University of Pennsylvania Atwood Library. Hooray for this terrific interview with this terrific Dr. Atwood. Thank you, Eleanor. That was very nice.
Thanks, Eleanor.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this. There's these stem cell therapies that we're seeing with animals. It's like we have all this kind of research with human medical, but also with animals. So tell us what's going on with the stem cell therapies.
Right. Yeah. The primary indication for it, at least in our practice, is for advanced osteoarthritis. And what needs to happen is that the stem cells are harvested from abdominal fat. So it does require a little operation mm-hmm. to get them. So that's the downside. But the plus side is once those stem cells are harvested, they go to a lab in California where they're concentrated, activated, modified a little bit, and then they come back to us in syringes and you actually do intra-articular injections of stem cells, millions and millions of stem cells right into the joints, and also IV, too. We give it intravenously. And we've done a number of cases over the years, and I think the results have been pretty good. Uh-huh. And they do bank the stem cells, too. They're in your – it's like a bank for umbilical tissue. Mm. And so every 6 months or every year, whenever it's necessary, we can get them again from the bank and re-inject. So it's good. It's not inexpensive, mm-hmm. but it is another option.
You know, though, sometimes you say not inexpensive. Boy, oh boy, how much we love our pets. For some of us, we'll do anything, right? And it just like we would for a human family member. Right. Richard says, my grandmother, born in 1910, a Truro farm girl turned province towner, had two female box turtles when she died in 1993. They were full grown then and seem about the same size now. My parents had them till 2010 when I inherited them. My intention was to release them where I believed my grandmother had found them. But then I met the state biologist who said, no, if they've been in captivity that long, you have to keep them. I won't live forever. Not sure where their next home will be. Oh boy, that's a tough one.
Hopefully she has a relative that can carry on and take care of this turtle.
Yeah, well, also maybe I would maybe check like someplace, you said it's on Truro, check with the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Maybe they would have some recommendation. Maybe they could take them. I'm not sure, but they might have some thoughts on what you might do with that. Annie from Edgartown says, my sweet dog Murphy, a schnauzer, is a patient of Dr. Atwood's practice and loves it there. Wondered if schnauzers tend to have digestive issues.
I don't think any more so than any other breed. No, I can't say that. I don't think there's any breed in particular that has digestive issues more than another breed. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, what they say about particular breeds isn't always true. I mean, there are some genetic components. But I think mm-hmm. of when I had my little Bichon and said, oh, Bichons hate the water. Well, not this guy. This guy loved the water. And in fact, in the summer, I used to have to shave him because he'd be, like a piece of walking Velcro down at the beach, right?
Right.
Right. Janet in Wellfleet said, this is my cat, Harold. He likes to be vacuumed. No, he's not deaf. Feel free to post on your website if you want. So we will share that, Janet. Thank you for sending the cat. And to each his own, right?
Yeah.
All right. And then we have an email from Susan who says, I recently adopted a rescue dog that suffers from car anxiety. Any advice? And do you believe in using anti-anxiety medications for this or other stressful situations? He's also has territorial issues and is aggressive to visitors. Do you recommend shock collars if used judiciously for this type of problem? Couple of questions there.
Yeah. For the motion sickness issue, usually what we try to have people do is to just put them in the car, don't go anywhere for the first couple of times, and then turn the engine on and see how that goes. And then back out of the driveway and come back again, see how that goes. And then start to increase the time in the car and see if you can slowly acclimate them to the car. and the motion. If that doesn't work, there are meds that you can try, anti-motion medicines like Antivert, Meclizine.
And if it's an anxiety, as she's saying, then...
That, there are other things you can use for that, too. Yeah. There's all sorts of... Trazodone, that's one we use.
Yeah, and what about the territorial issues? That's a little tougher.
That's a little tougher. Yeah, that's a little harder. That's, yeah. Maybe you would actually need a trainer.
Yeah.
I was gonna, a behavior person.
And there's a lot of different methods to behavior. So, Susan, I would recommend talking to a couple of different trainers. I know I had a dog that had that same problem, was more anxiety than territorial. And we tried the little clicker, you know, that clicker training,
right,
where, you know, you do the click, click, and you reward them. And it worked pretty well, but mm-hmm. You got to really stay on top of it.
Yeah, there are folks that just do that sort of work, and they're very good at it.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. There is a growing pet insurance industry. What are your thoughts on whether it's worthwhile? I'm just thinking back to the question about the dental costs. Mm-hmm. Does pet insurance cover that kind of stuff?
And, when we were talking about the stem cell issue too. The most of these policies cover stem cell therapy, so that's another good thing to keep in mind. The thing about pet insurance is they don't cover pre-existing conditions. Mm. So if you're going
to
get them when they're young, before anything shows up. And I always recommend the policies that are for sort of catastrophic illness and things like that. There are policies that cover everything from, heartworm medication to annual vaccines and checkups. That's not the policy you want.
You're probably going to pay for it
It's just deferred payment. Yeah, you're paying it. You just don't see it because you're paying it every month. So the reasonably priced catastrophic illness policies are much better that way. If, God forbid, your animal gets hit by a car, breaks a leg, gets cancer, or needs one of these expensive therapies, or expensive imaging like a CT scan or something, those things are covered.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Pam calling from Harwich. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two cats that I adopted from the Animal Rescue League in Brewster. One recently passed at age 16 from renal failure. I have her adopted sister home. She's 15, indoor cat. The problem is that she loves to play. She acts like a kitten most of the time. But at night, she walks around the house almost howling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so painful for me to hear because I don't know if she's mourning her sister. It's been 6 months. I don't know if I should get her another elder cat, a senior cat, to be a companion for her.
Yeah.
Any suggestions?
Did she howl before the other cat died? Did they howl at night?
No, she's always been very chatty, and she'll chat more when she has one of her toys, mice, or whatever, that she's playing with in the moment. But it's a different sound for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that is the cat that I had, which we only had one, she used to do that. Not all the time, but sometimes you'd hear that.
Yeah.
That's that horrible. Right. And you're like, who is she calling? Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing to rule out is make sure the cat doesn't have any, medical issues that you were unaware of. I mean, sometimes being parasitized, hairballs. Just make sure there's no, medical or physical problem that the cat has. So probably get a check to make sure all those things have been ruled out. And then beyond that, maybe it is purely behavioral, grieving the loss of the other cat, just hasn't gotten over it yet. Maybe it is a little cognitive decline where she's, sometimes animals, when they get, older, will have this sort of disorientation and sort of paced, aimless wandering at night and so on.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of mental decline.
And the other thing, too, about thinking about getting another elderly cat, I would personally be a little careful there. I did that with our Bichon, who got a little bit older and seemed to suffer from a little depression in the winter when we all went off to work and school. So this is when I adopted the second dog, which was a younger dog. And as soon as that happened, my Bichon was diabetic. He lost some of his vision. He wanted nothing to do with this younger puppy that just he found as an annoyance. So I would be careful there. You may be increasing your problems.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, once you've established that there's no physical problem, then there are meds that you could consider trying too. Your vet would help you with that. But we're using all kinds of things, including CBD oil, believe it or not.
Well, that's what I was thinking too, because I know she did get a clean bill of health about a month and a half ago after the loss of the other cat. I don't know about that. I know that she does have, you know, she's starting to get cataracts as an older cat. And I'm petrified of bringing another senior cat into the house because she is a princess. Mm-hmm. She waits for me outside of the shower and I give her a washcloth bath. And it's our bonding time together. And she's very pampered, but I fear, you know, bringing another cat into the mix.
I feel your pain.
It could backfire, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Pam. Good luck with that. Hopefully she'll get over that grieving soon. All right, let's talk to Larry, who's calling from Truro. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I have two 9-year-old cats, indoor cats, go to the vet. They're generally very healthy, seems like it. However, both of them periodically will throw up, and in what they regurgitate looks like hairball to me. Mm-hmm. Is that normal?
Long-haired cats, it's more common in long-haired cats because there's much more hair being consumed as they groom themselves. So, yeah, I would have to say it's normal. And there's ways to deal with that. One would be, you know, increase the amount of grooming that you do. Try to get all that extra, hair off. The other thing is there's hairball formula foods that you can buy that have ingredients in them to help the hair, you know, slip through the GI tract and then on out. And then there's also hairball medication you can buy. It's kind of like Vaseline, really. Mm-hmm. And you just give that to them a couple of times a week. But yeah, it's quite normal. Mm-hmm. And
Larry.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We have Lee says, I rescued a neutered male St. Bernard a year ago, small for the breed, just 115 pounds, but very strong. He turned 3 in October. He's the most affectionate dog I have ever had, loves everybody, and my 3-year-old granddaughter hugged him. But he's aggressive to other dogs, except my other dog, 9-year-old female Newfoundland, who's his sister. I really mean aggressive to the point that I don't take him to public parks anymore, but go to isolated places. Clearly, he wasn't socialized well. Help. I think you need a behaviorist for that.
That dog
right?
needs a behaviorist. Yeah. It's potentially a solvable problem, but you need somebody who really knows what they're doing with behavior.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, we love our pets so much and, you know, we spoil them and sometimes we have a tendency to give them a little too much and we have obesity as a problem in animals as well as people. So what are your thoughts on feeding and what overfeeding our animals?
Well, I mean, there's two components to it, maybe three, really. One is the amount of exercise that they get. One is what they're eating and how much they eat. And the third may be, again, you know, early age neutering may have a role in their inability to keep their weight to a more normal level. So, that's not proven. It's just a theory, but that may be playing a role. But anyway, you feed low-cal foods. There are low-cal foods out there. Feed less, exercise more.
Mm-hmm. And look at the ingredients. If corn's the first ingredient, probably not the food you
want. And some of these dogs have thyroid issues also that influence their capacity to maintain an ideal weight.
Yeah. You know what I did one time when I had the German Shepherd was I got the samples of the food, you know, picked out the foods, and then I just laid them all out in dishes and saw which one he went to first and thought, okay, that's the one he likes. Right? And why do they eat dirt? What's up with that? Dirt.
I don't know if anybody knows. They used to there's some sort of mineral deficiency or something they're lacking in their diet. That's
or the
why
grass
they, do
they want to throw up.
I don't know if that's been ever proven.
Yeah, I can't say. All right, we're going to post links with more information on pet health from the American Veterinary Medical Association at our website, capeandislands.org, and we'll post that video of the cat being vacuumed. Dr. Stephen Atwood, Mixed Animal Practice on Martha's Vineyard. Thanks for being here. We'll have to have you back again soon. We didn't get to all the topics we wanted to talk about today.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks for being here. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.